My name is Jordan Carter, rapporteur. It's the 10th of July at 1900 UTC in the year 2015 in the Julian calendar. We've got a pretty simple and straightforward agenda today. I'd like to say, as I said last time, thank you to all the people who've been doing work on these papers. I think we all acknowledge and respect the fact we're working under rather intense time pressure. And so the fact that we're having anything to discuss on these calls at such short notice is quite wonderful. I'll just add one item to the agenda in the review of the agenda, which is a quick review of what we're going to talk about on Monday's call as well. So that'll be an item 5. For the roll call, I think we've always in these calls used the attendants in the Adobe room, plus anyone who's made a notice, if we've even been keeping a list. Does anyone else have anything else they need to add to the agenda today? We'll do an any other business item right at the end as well. So if it's a small thing, don't worry about adding it now. We'll be able to deal with it later. And I don't see any immediate hands up, so let's crack right on into the second item, which is the Community Powers paper on the budget and the strategic plan, which my understanding is that Jonathan Zook has drafted. So I don't know if, Robin, you've had a chance to engage or look at that. Because it's 7 a.m. on Saturday, I haven't read my email, so I'm not up to date. But, Jonathan, I'd like to invite you to take the floor and to take us through the changes that you have made in this first draft of version 2 of the budget powers.
Sure, thanks. This is Jonathan Zook for the transcript. I did go ahead and try and make changes, but it's just a straw man because I was clearly making some decisions about things that we did not reach any consensus on or any that I could see as I dug back through our transcripts. But if you recall, the lion's share of the concerns that were raised in first I should say the lion's share of the comments were supportive of this community power. We were on the right track, and most people think that it would add to accountability. There was literally only one detractor, and so mostly it was an expression of concerns associated with the exercise of this power and the sort of practical implications of an intransigent board and an inflexible community that might lead to a kind of deadlock. So probably the two things that I would say are the most frequent comments. One is there was a lot of folks that made an effort to say, let's improve the creation process so that this power isn't necessary. So, that was probably one of the most prevalent statements in the comment. Let's improve interaction between the board, the staff, and the community as the budget and strategic plan are developed so that this power is not even used. So I was trying to find a way to kind of bake that sentiment into the document without going too far into, sort of narrative prose about it, because a lot of that discussion is something that we already mentioned would be shifted to Workstream 2. So what I wanted to do was emphasize its importance and then remind the reader that it's serious and that the work group took it seriously and that it's a part of the plan for Stream 2. And then the second issue that was most prevalent was just about deadlock and how to break deadlock and what that kind of complexity that would create. And the most recent comment about that is actually Shireen's comment that was circulated recently with excellent responses, I think, from Jordan and Mathieu. So that was sort of the basis on which I was trying to create these edits, and the proposed responses, if you recall, that we agreed to was to look at the planning process to improve the equality engagement in Workstream 2. There was a notion of the CCWG considering to limit the number of times a plan or a budget can be rejected. A couple of folks brought up the idea of sort of capping this process somehow, and I tried to embody that as well. And then The caretaker approach, again, came up, which I think is probably better dealt with in Keith's draft. So that's sort of the background, if you will. So then looking at the document itself, you can see the changes. I don't know what the best way is to proceed, whether it's to read them aloud or let people read them. One of the things that I tried to suggest in the first paragraph here is that it's important to deal with this before the beginning of the implementation of the new strategic plan or budget. So I was trying to get at the notion that this was important to do because the processes that currently exist to kind of unwind a strategic plan or a budget after the fact won't necessarily get the job done given financial commitments that might have been made, et cetera. So that was what that first line was about. Financial commitments are made on behalf of the organization that are difficult to unwind after the fact. In the second paragraph said that often these budgets and strategic plans are put to the community without sufficient detail to facilitate thoughtful consideration. And so there's a number of instances where, you know, it's a sort of a general heading and it's not enough information to actually know how outreach spending or internationalization or something like that will be spent. So it's about greater specificity. And something specific about that we already had mentioned, I brought up toward the front, was in the CWG stewardship proposal that there needed to be much more transparency and clear itemization of the costs associated with the INA functions. So I brought that up. That's actually a statement from the previous draft from below. And then continue with the line as it was. So then where I start trying to address some of the concerns is here in new paragraph 3, the numbering changed here somehow. So what I was trying to do was emphasize and agree with the majority of the comments that the process by which budgets and strategic plans are developed must be enhanced to include greater transparency and community involvement earlier, such that the community buy-in is a byproduct of the process. Improved interaction between the staff, board, and community is essential for strategic planning within a multi-stakeholder organization. A considerable effort to improve these processes is embedded in Workstream 2 plan. Successful reform in this area will render this new power nearly anachronistic, as the community will have been an integral part of budget and strategic plan development. Barring such community involvement, the power of the community to send a budget or strategic plan back to the board for reconsideration is essential. So that was my attempt to kind of deal with a fairly high-frequency comment, which was, let's fix the process before it gets to this point, but we won't be getting around to that yet. And so given that, we need the ability to send the budget back. Then there's a description of the power, and then I said that there would be community consultations, as there are now, that could form the basis of a rejection. And then I also, and this is, might be a little bit redundant, I think we end up saying this several times, but it's important to note that this recommended power does not enable the community to make direct changes to the budget, but rather to halt its implementation and return to the budget to the board for further refinement. And then the rest is the same. Then further down here in what's numbered paragraph 5, I said it's been suggested in the initial public comments that perhaps the community should be limited to 2 rejections of these plans per cycle before resorting to other accountability mechanisms in order to avoid paralysis. I suspect this will be a topic of our conversation today. I chose to interpret these comments to mean that limit on the number of rejections would actually be a requirement to escalate and not a requirement to acquiesce on the part of the community. I don't know if that's how they were intended, but that's how I chose to interpret them. So that's embedded in that language. The requirement is designed to prevent an endless cycle of new revisions that could theoretically lead to unnecessary delay. So that's in this next paragraph is about dealing with this issue of constantly bringing up new points. Again, this was already addressed in the initial draft, but I tried to bring home the importance of this in preventing the deadlock. That was, again, one of the more frequent concerns raised in the public comments. So the idea that you have to get it all of your issues out there at first is one more mechanism that we've embedded to try and prevent deadlock. Then it's expected that the reforms of the plan development process contemplated in WorkStream 2 would render the use of this power highly unlikely, but should inefficiencies to its implementation surface, the details could be subject to review by scheduled review of the ICANN accountability and transparency. So the ACRT review that would come on schedule could review this if it turns out that it really was leading to a bogged down process and that the actual implementation of power needed to be revisited. Again, it kind of goes without saying, but I was trying to address that concern. And so then finally, the last thing that I did was actually add another question in questions and open issues. Do you believe there should be a cap on rejections of a particular plan by the community, requiring escalation to other accountability mechanisms to prevent paralysis? So that's kind of how I dealt with the fact that we hadn't reached some consensus on that notion of caps. I thought we'd toss it back out to the public. So that's basically what I did. I don't know the best way to lead the discussion, but I'm happy to take questions or discussions about this.
Yeah, I think as the drafter, Jonathan, you should manage a queue and a general discussion, and I think we start off with the general and see if it winds down. So that's okay. All I'll say now and leave it to you to manage the queue.
All right. Then I queue up Steve Delbianco.
Hey, Jonathan. I thank you for the good work on this. The business constituency, which is where I represent, was one of the ones who raised the question of running an organization on month after month after month of a continuing resolution, like last year's budget. And a number of the BC members are U.S. citizens, and they kept pointing out the continuing resolution being the method that's used in the United States. So we characterized it as a pejorative term, continuing resolution, because as you said in the text, it's operating without an authorized budget. But it isn't really paralysis in the sense that it's still funding its operations. It's just funding it at last year's levels without any authorization for this year. And I wonder whether, as we tee this up for the CCWG and the next round of public comment, if we can be as clear as we can that paralysis isn't really the downside here. The downside is an organization that runs on last year's budget. That's my first point. And my second and only other point is that the back and forth between the community and the board really becomes under the control of the board. I'll give you an example. If the board proposed a budget, the community with a 75% vote said no, well, then the board is at its discretion to make a few changes and come back with a new budget. Nowhere in our procedure do we force the board to act in some period of time. And in fact, if the board was happy with last year's operating budget, they might not respond to us and instead just run under the continuing resolution of the prior budget. Is that okay? I don't expect you to have all the answers, but if that's okay, we could end up with a rejection followed by, well, nothing. There's no way for our mechanism to force the board to hurry up and come back with a revised proposal. Thank you, and good work.
So thanks, Steve. And I guess I'll just quickly address that. I take your point that maybe we should try to de-energize some of the vocabulary that's used in the comments by shifting the notion away from paralysis to continuing resolution or something like that. I guess my concern is that I think I could certainly foresee instances in which the community would not be happy with last year's budget. I mean, I would say that was maybe true this year. Giving the board the ability to simply just relax and operate on last year's budget may not be, what the community would be interested in. But obviously that's open for discussion. But that's my first reaction.
Yeah, and Jonathan, I wasn't loving that either, but I wanted to point out to you that unless we write something that forces them to come back with a new proposal, we have handed them the ability to just sit on last year's budget.
Right. That's probably true. Alan, go ahead.
Thank you. 2 points. On that last issue, working on last year's budget is not problematic because they were trying to raise the budget, and we don't agree. If, on the other hand, they were happy with the status quo and we were trying to lower the budget because we believe that income is lower and it's prudent to lower the expense budget, then sitting on last year's budget gives them free rein. So it is something to consider. You know, how important it is a different issue.
Well, and it may not just be lowering or raising. It may actually be reallocation.
I understand. I'm simply saying that, you know, if our intent is to try to lower any particular thing, then last year's budget, running on last year's budget does not achieve that. You know, it's just an awareness issue. I read somewhere in the last 12 hours, and since my last teleconference ended 12 hours ago, I'm a little bit confused as to where I read it. There was some wording somewhere that talked about being able to refuse a budget after it was passed but before it comes into effect. Is that in your document or is it somewhere else I read that?
Yes, sir, it is. It's in my document.
Okay. I'll point out that we've had at least one case in the last few years where the budget was not approved till sometime in July. That is, there is no period of time after which it's approved before it comes into effect. And just asking, is that something we have to be concerned about? Because clearly a board could effectively delay approving the budget until it's already in effect. So
that's a good point. I don't feel like
raising the issue.
Did we lose Jonathan?
I don't know.
No, I'm here. Can you still hear me?
I can.
Okay. So that's a good point about that period maybe not existing. I'm not sure how best to handle that. So I'm switching back and forth between the screen with the queue in it and taking notes on this. But maybe it'll be better for me to go back and look at the transcript for this than to take notes and manage the queue at the same time.
Yes.
Greg, Chatton, go ahead.
Jonathan, just one more thing. Although I know people don't like the trust me model, we may not be able to make everything 100% bulletproof.
yeah, I agree.
I'm done.
Greg, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. Greg Chatton, for the record. I think one thing that I like in what I see here, but that clarifies some of the concerns that have come up repeatedly on the paralysis point, is that the budget does not need our approval. We have the power to reject it, and it's kind of an extraordinary power that requires a supermajority action on the part of the community, however the community is embodied for that purpose. So I would encourage us to stay with that and not to move to an approval process where the budget would have to actually go through a positive step of community review and approval every year in order for it to be enacted. I think that would be a mistake in practice. It might sound good in concept, but I think that this strikes the right balance and allays the right concern and gives us the power to hopefully to move things. I think we do need to consider the idea of kind of pocket vetoing the veto by just going off of last year's budget, and we may need to have some kind of cure for that so that they can't go off the same budget year after year as we, you know, frantically veto them, but I suppose at that point we turn to other and sterner methods, such as spilling the board or taking away their milk and cookies. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. So certainly this plan does not suggest in any way that we would create an approval system for the budget, because I think there is consensus that that would start to be onerous and really undermine the role of the board, right? But there was a great number of comments that said that we need to improve the communication between the board and the rest of the community and staff as these things are being developed, so that the budget or the strategic plan aren't a surprise. It would require a power like this to be used, right? That came up often in the public comments. And so I encourage you to look at this and make sure that I've captured the spirit that you're after correctly. But the idea is simply that let's improve in whatever the best way is, because we're talking about Workstream 2, let's improve the processes by which these things are created, how the consultations are managed, because there are consultations today, and incorporated, such that this power, the need for this power would be substantially alleviated, right? So, I mean, that's really the goal of the text I put in there, is to suggest that we take that notion that let's improve the process on the front end seriously, and that it's a part of Workstream 2, but for the time being, we really need to have this power in order to, create accountability for the board. So do look and make sure that the text I've got there captures the spirit that you're after, but that is the fine line that I was trying to walk. Jordan, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. I work in a membership organization. I'm the CEO of it. If our council proposes a budget, in theory, the members are meant to approve it before it takes effect. Their annual meeting is 3 months after the start of the financial year. There's never been a situation where the council has passed a budget that the members are going to reject, because they very well know that the disruption that would flow from that would be intolerable and difficult for the organization. So, like with all of these powers, this is a matter of incentives. By the board knowing that there's a backstop for the community to be able to send a budget back for reconsideration, the incentives on them to listen to community input and to make sure it's taken into account the first time are considerably raised, because the stakes are raised if they don't. So like all of these powers, I think we're discussing, the point is shifting the incentives and the messages. It's the reallocation of authority into the internet community rather than leaving it sort of stranded in the board, and it will have an entirely beneficial effect. I just wanted to add a couple of points. This power is meant to be at the budget and the strategic and operating plans, and I think our drafting needs to broaden out the way it's talked about a little bit, because in my mind, in the kind of job I do, it's the strategic direction that is actually the most important, and I don't think anyone could tell you that having an unlimited number of returns of a strategic plan would pose a problem for ICANN. And so if we have a discussion in Paris that really leads to concerns around the budget, one possible thing that we could explore is limiting the number of returns of the budget, but not of any other aspect of this, because the operating plan and the strategic plan are less time-sensitive documents by definition. So I just wanted to raise that on the table. The other point I wanted to make from a drafting point of view is that I do not think we should be asking the same questions of the community in our public comment 2 report that we did in our public comment 1 report. I think that would be confusing and somewhat disabling for the community. I'm hoping that we can come up with a list of key questions that are on point and that really help people focus on the critical decisions. So that's just a drafting thing to take into account later. And I wanted to add my support to the fact that we need to have a part of this process that requires the board to respond with an updated budget proposal in a timely way. And finally, Jonathan, thank you for doing the drafting here.
Not at all. So I'm happy to come up with new questions. I wasn't sure that whether or not we wanted to preserve the existing ones, so I just added one new question, but there's certainly others that could be useful. Next in the queue is Robin.
Hi, this is Robin. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Okay, great. So I think we could build this out even more, particularly in the bylaws, where we talk about the consultative process that the community and the board should go. I know we've talked about doing that in Workstream 2, but I think it's worth putting in Workstream 1 just because it's so important to this process, the budget and strategic plan approval process, that I think that it's it's not an enormous amount of work, but it's really important to actually get that nailed down and get it into the bylaws, because if it's in the bylaws, if it isn't actually followed properly, we've got a bylaws violation and some enforceability mechanisms that way that we can rely upon to try and ensure that both the board and the community would be on the same page. So I think just trying to include some processes in the bylaws that particularly when it comes to the empowered designator model, because you can get enforceability with a pre-approval process much more easily than you can with the rejection process. I think I know there are some for whom the concern of enforceability is paramount, so I think we need to explore that, trying to get the most enforceability possible out of that model. So I think that having more meat on these bones and looking at different options for achieving the same goal would give the community even more to think about and to ultimately decide if that's what's the right approach for us to take. Thanks.
Let me say back to you what I think I heard so that we can discuss it, Robin. Are you suggesting that what we've currently specified will be in the workstream 2, which is enhanced processes for interaction between the board, staff, and the community in the creation of these documents, should be moved out of workstream 2 and into workstream 1? I guess that's the first question, because right now there is some consultation that happens. It's just not binding, right? And so I think the current document suggests that the current consultation it will at least act as a way for the community to express their concerns that might form the basis of a rejection. But it's not. There wasn't anything in the current plan or in our current plan for Stream 1 to really reform the development process of the budget of the strategic plan. So that's, I guess, my first question. And then did you also say that you were, in fact, a fan of an actual pre-approval, which Greg had expressed some concern with, but Jordan seems to be more sanguine about. So are those two statements accurate from some reason what you just said?
Well, I wouldn't say that I'm in favor of a pre-approval, but I think that it should be explored when it comes to the empowered designator model, because that gets us more enforceability. So I think that it should be something that we look at, particularly because people have said enforceability is such a concern. So just getting the community and the board on the same page in an enforceable way, we might, it sounds like, have more teeth if we do it as a pre-approval with respect to the empowered designator model. I don't know that you have to do it that way as a membership. Sounds like you don't at all. But in terms of exploring all of our options, like what Larry Strickling said we were supposed to do, if we can have different ways of getting to the same place, I think we should put them out there and see what people like better.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's a real effort to design a process, a community engagement process for developing the budget and strategic plan that we won't get done in anything but bulleted form. So maybe it's a question of constructing some interesting questions about that, but I think I'm with Jordan that it would be very difficult to move into Workstream 1. But let's keep going. Steve DelBianco.
Jonathan, on page 2 of the document, this returns to the point we discussed earlier upon the back and forth between the board and the community on the budget. There's a line in there about it's been suggested in the public comments that perhaps the community could be limited to 2 rejections. That came from the BC, and even in the BC, we were not even clear what it means when you hit the limit of 2. Does it mean that after 2, the board just gets the budget it wants because the community's out of objections? Or does it mean that the board better just settle in and act as if they're going to have to run on last year's budget for the next 8 months? So I don't want to imply that BC question in any way suggests that it solves the problem, because it doesn't solve the problem. And without some more explicit discussion of what it would mean to run out of rejection, we would create the impression that we have this kernel of a solution in our document, and people would think that we've got it solved, but we don't. If you limit the number of rejections, the implication is what? The board gets its budget or runs on last year's. Thank you.
So, Steve, thanks for the comment. I mean, this is what I raised at the beginning. I took a much more aggressive interpretation of it, and it wasn't just the BC that made that suggestion. How I chose to interpret it was neither of those that you just described, but that, in fact, it would be incumbent on the community at that point to escalate to its other accountability measures after two rounds. In other words,
during the escalation, are they running on last year's budget, Jonathan?
During the escalation, are they running on last year's budget? Yes. But in other words, it would trigger a discussion about changes in the board, is what I was trying to imply.
I agree with that. So go ahead and put in the text that after two rejections, last year's budget would be the rule while other accountability measures are pursued. How about that?
Right. I can clarify that. I thought that was sort of a given from the other things in the document, but so I mean, I don't know if everyone agrees with that either. I'm happy to hear you do, but I know that I anticipated it might be controversial, the suggestion that after two rejections, the next discussion would be about removing board members, and that's how I chose to interpret the notion of caps. How do other people feel about treating the suggestion that way? Or, I mean, I guess, I don't know whether or not an IRP would be come into play or if it would be something more severe at that point. Highlight the text for debate in Paris. Yeah, I'm happy to do that. I'll try to reduce this to a few questions then that we need to discuss. Does that make sense, Jordan?
Yeah, we haven't talked systematically about how to represent our work for the Paris meeting, but I think it would be helpful if maybe at the top of these documents, if we're doing one for each power, because they're nice and short to read, right? It might be helpful if at the top or at the bottom there's like just a little box grayed out that says these are the key questions to discuss or the key things we've changed. Just to help draw people's eye. And they'll see the track changes as well, but so it prevents any kind of slipping things through or anything. But that'd be helpful, I think.
When we release white papers to the media, we often do discussion points and things like that. So same thing. Matthew, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. Matthew shares for the record. Just on that last point on what's the incentive for getting the board to talk and to negotiate with the community on the budget. My only concern about the notion of incentivizing them to do so by decreasing the budget is that one of the issues that we're in this discussion is that the issue of going backwards and forwards on the budget could bring instability and uncertainty to operations within ICANN. I think if one starts to say, well, you better come to the table, otherwise we're going to start decreasing the budget, then I think that might be yet another argument against the power as a whole. That was just one comment on that. But my other point is that in the third paragraph, which is the new one that you've put in there, the last line there talks about barring community involvement in the power of the community to send a budget or strategic plan back to the board for reconsideration is essential. But the bulk of the text in there talks about Workstream 2 in a way that it does not characterize or suggest what Workstream 2 successful reform in Workstream 2 would actually mean or equate to. It worries me a bit. That phrasing just worries me a little bit. I think it would perhaps be better to say that the powers that we're asking for now as a part of Workstream 1 would stay in place, and until the community is satisfied that the work in Workstream 2 to ensure further interaction by the community in strategic plan and budget development is in place and adequately accounts for the powers in Workstream 1, or something to that effect.
Well, and I'll look to clarify that. I mean, what I tried to say is that I have to find where I said it, but I said that it would be much less likely to be used at that point. Because, I mean, again, the comments were saying, well, rather than do this, improve the process on the way in, right? And so I guess I was trying to get to the point of we're doing this and making a plan to improve the process on the way in, which will render this much less likely to be used. So I didn't mean to imply it would go away. I was just trying to create a transition away from that narrative about Workstream 2 back to the need to do this in Workstream 1.
Okay, I'm happy to make suggestions if that would be useful.
Sure. Did I encapsulate your concern, though? Is that what your concern is, that I'm implying that we would get rid of this once those reforms took place?
Yes, and there's no real measure of what success would be in Workstream 2. And the fact that, you know, I have concerns about when work in Workstream 2 does actually get underway, for how long it should actually take, and what it will result in. So I think that's why reinforcing the importance of Workstream 1 work going forward until it's considered to be adequately accounted for in the Workstream 2 process, I think is key. So that was...
Yeah, I wasn't even trying to imply that. I wasn't implying that it would ever go away, simply that its utility would be, you know, that its importance would be diminished after that, but that we would leave it in place. But I'll try to go through that again to see what points of clarity. I have Jordan Carter again.
You said something before, Jonathan, where you said that I seemed relaxed about pre-approval of the budget. I just wanted to clarify that I don't feel relaxed about that at all. I think that we've set these community powers up in a way that they leave the fiduciary responsibilities and the actual responsibilities to things like proposed budgets and so on in the hands of the board. And I think we have a doctrine of minimal change here, and that's part of why I don't think that a kind of pre-approval thing is a good idea. Subject, the qualifier I'd add to that is whether if we end up with a designated model, then we'd need to look at how those interact. The other point the point about the drafting of the text, I think we are going to have to do quite a bit of drafting consistency between now and when we publish the report. So there may be changes in the words there, but we certainly shouldn't be trying to change the comments at some point. The last point I'd just like to make is that we have 20 days until we have to finalize our public comment 2 report. I would like us to have been in a position to improve the processes around budget and strategic planning, but I'm firmly convinced that nothing we could do between now and then would be anything other than token. And so I really think that we would be going beyond our mandate for what's required in Workstream 1 if we were to try and incorporate that work. So I have to sadly disagree with Robin on that point.
I think I agree with you. Thanks, Jordan. Aubrey?
Yeah, this is Aubrey speaking. And I want to argue actually in favor of and very much in keeping with Jordan said of what is the minimal change we can meet on what was proposed that answers a comment we got. So the comment we got from the business constituency and others is, but what does this achieve if they can just reject it twice and then live with next year's budget? So that's why I'm proposing, and I'm trying to do it formally now as opposed to just in the list, the notion that the budget does decrement. Now, that is a disincentive, and it is one that can be automatic. I don't believe it's confusing as I think Matthew was indicating to going forward for the staff, because they know that if that budget doesn't get through, then there's going to be a decrement, and they start figuring out how to live with that decrement. I don't know why Steve thinks it's a bad idea, but it's obviously not something we want to happen, but it is something that keeps the group from being sort of complacent of, hey, you know, last year's budget is fine, let's just not deal with this nonsense and just, you know, go forward with the budget as we plan. So I would really like to ask people to give a deeper consideration to that kind of automatic disincentive that, yes, no one likes it, and that therefore makes us more likely to be able to come to some sort of accommodation between those that are rejecting the budget and those that are proposing the budget. So I just wanted to put in an argument for it. Thank you.
Thanks, Audrey. Steve?
Yeah, 10% per year has the elegance that's appealing to an engineer like Aubrey and I, and because it's a single step, it's unlikely to be enough, and it's more likely to be too much from time to time. I'll just give you two examples. If you read the ION article, ION magazine article that was in our bags in Buenos Aires, it was probably the best thing in that bag, I have to say. There was an analysis of the ICANN budget and how it has ramped up its spending for the new GTLD program, and that if you look at the current run rate of revenues, they are way more than 10% higher than the anticipated revenues next year. There's going to be a significant expenditure cut at ICANN because the revenue is not there to support it. So I believe the 10% is completely arbitrary, and it might well be way too low a number to incentivize ICANN to make the cuts they need to make. They might just as well say, fine, we'll live with the 10% cut and get the money we need from raiding our reserve funds. That doesn't serve any of our purposes. And to fast forward into the future, we may need an ICANN that ramps up its compliance spending in a big way, and the fact that they won't do so and the budget keeps getting rejected by the community, well, then suddenly they cut 10% more, and a big chunk of it comes out of compliance. So instead of getting our way because we wanted them to spend more, they get to say, forget it, I'll spend less. So I know these are just two scenarios out of many, and you can probably manufacture scenarios where the 10% incentive would have just the right effect. But it feels like it'll always be either too much or too little. It'll hardly ever be just right. And I think we're better off with Zook's idea that after two rejections, let's stop playing this game of ping pong and move to other escalation measures of community powers. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
It looks like we've talked ourselves out, Jonathan.
Okay. Anybody else had any more comment on that subject? But I will. I'll highlight that particular point as one of the discussion topics for Paris.
Thank you for that work, and thank you for that conversation. That was a good discussion, people, and hopefully we can pick up some of those debates with the larger group in Paris. Something more broad than the Fab 14 we've got today. The next agenda item is has gone right out of my head. It's Keith Jarzak's paper on the removal of individual board members, if I'm not mistaken. Unless his paper is about recalling the whole board. Steve, Chris, are you here?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yep.
All right.
Recalling the entire board. Go ahead. Right. Same pattern. Introduce us to the paper that you've got. And then we'll discuss.
Great. Thank you, Jordan. And hi, everybody. This is Keith Drazik for the transcript and the chat. I tackled the Community Power 5.6, which is the recall of the entire board. The discussion document that's on the screen that I circulated to the list a few hours ago is really just that. It's a discussion document. It's not at all intended to reflect something that is ready for prime time with anybody other than this group and ultimately the rest of the CCWG in Paris. To facilitate the discussion, I pulled in the summary from our public comment review. So the blue text that you see in front of you right now on the screen is the summary text from our public comment review. And I added a couple of things. One is the red, the last bullet in red there that refers to the CWG dependencies. So I just want to run through this real quick just to refresh everybody's memory as to where we are, and then we'll get into the details of the actual text. So the public comment questions were, do you agree that the power for the community to recall the entire board would enhance ICANN's accountability? Do you agree with the list of requirements for this recommendation? And if not, please detail how you would recommend amending these requirements. The public comment summary on recalling the entire board included responses 391 to 419 in our table. There were a total of 28 comments in the section, 25 comments suggested agreements, that's almost 90%. Three were divergent, and six noted concerns. There was no confusion noted, and there was broad agreement that this power would, in fact, enhance ICANN's accountability. That said, the areas of concern that were raised, I think, were very legitimate. The key main issues or concerns would be there was a question about the threshold. We had suggested 75% or 80% as possibilities. The majority of the responses were supportive of the 75% number as being appropriate, with 80% receiving a couple of indications of support, but it was definitely a minority view. And finally, another main issue or concern that was raised, and this is sort of broad concern, was unintended consequences of risk and instability. And I think this is something that we need to take very seriously. So the specific concerns that were raised in the public comments were basically a point that spilling the board should be, in fact, a last resort after all else had failed. And I think that's clearly the intention of this community power. The need to clarify the circumstances that would lead to a board spill. Several comments really highlighted the fact that because this is such a significant step, that the circumstances that would trigger or lead to the spilling of the board need to be better defined, that it shouldn't simply be left completely open. And that we need to clarify the details of continuity measures. So, in other words, you know, this gets to the point of, you know, what happens after the decision is made? Is there a caretaker board? How do you appoint the members of the caretaker board? Is it something more like a vote of no confidence and then a subsequent call for early elections? I think there's a range of views on exactly the process or the procedure that would be followed. And to be fair, we were not specific enough in the first round of in our first proposal, and that is something that will require quite a bit more work. And then finally, I added the bullet point of a concern because it was, in fact, raised by the CWG transition in the public comment response does the CCWG proposal meet the dependencies in the CWG proposal? And in the public comments, the CWG comment suggested that it appeared to. In other words, that what we had proposed in the first draft would meet the CWG dependencies, but this is an ongoing item that we need to track. So let me pause there and see if there's any questions or comments just on my summary or the introduction, and then I'll get into the more detailed references in the actual language of the proposal. So any comments or questions at this point? Okay, seeing none, then let's move on.
It's Alan. I've got one quick comment.
Sure, Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, just as you're going through the next part to highlight, there were a number of comments, certainly verbal ones, and I'm not quite sure to how what extent that they were in the public comments, that it would be easy and a quick process to name a new board. And if you look at the processes that we have in place, the only ones we have in place by both the NOMCOM and the ACSOs, it could take close to a year. And I think as we go through and propose caretaker boards, we need to make sure that the organization can keep function for a relatively extended period of time where there may be new crises and things coming going forward that we have to cover. So thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you very much, Alan, and I completely agree with you 100%, and that is an item that I was going to refer to as
okay.
We move on.
Thank you.
But thank you again for raising that, because I think that is absolutely one of the issues that was raised in terms of the continuity measures. Let's get into the detail of it, and then we can talk about it in more specifics. The first paragraph or first sentence there under 5.6, power recalling the ICANN board, and I'll refer to it by the numerical indicators that we use, so paragraph 240, says there may be situations where removing individual ICANN directors is not seen as a sufficient remedy for the community, where a set of problems have become so entrenched that the community wishes to recall the entire ICANN board in one decision. So a number of the comments raised questions related to the first part of that sentence where it says there may be situations. And several of the comments indicated a need to be further specific or to clarify what those situations may be. So there may be some who feel that we should just leave it, completely open, but there are clearly others who feel like we need to be a little bit more specific or clear as to when we think this type of a mechanism might be used. So I'm just flagging that as something that we as a group are going to need to focus on. I don't think we can necessarily decide that today. We can certainly discuss it if people want to, but that's one area where we're going to need to apply some additional focus. But I'm going to pause for comments and questions as we go through this rather than waiting until the end. So if anybody would like to weigh in on any of these points as we go, please raise your hand. Jordan and then Steve.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons we left that silent was because of in the reference model in the public comment one report, because there was a membership contemplation, and the members don't have any restraints on the reasons that they can appoint or remove directors, and neither do neither do designators. So it was about being consistent with that. That doesn't mean we can't put in the bylaws some criteria if we like. It just means those criteria wouldn't necessarily be enforceable in either model. But I'm relaxed about that because in part it would be a statement of intent. So if we were to end up saying that this power would be used where the board collectively is governing the organization in a way that was inconsistent with the bylaws or incompatible with the community's wishes or whatever, I'm not too fussed. But in reality, in a hard-edged reality, I don't think it makes any blind bit of difference whatsoever. So that's why I'm relaxed.
Okay, thanks, Jordan. And I think that makes sense. I guess my response to that is that maybe a pointer here to ensure that we're syncing this with whatever the model becomes, right? Whatever the model ends up being, is that we'll need to make sure that this point about the criteria or the specific situations would need to be consistent with what's permitted under that particular model. Okay, Steve and then Alan.
Steve Del Bianco. Keith, I'm not as relaxed as Jordan on this one because I believe that our May 3rd proposals deliberately did not specify specific criteria that had to be met or principles that had to be met, a standard that had to be met for a board recall. I actually recall discussions we had where we said you cannot anticipate every possible reason and you should not constrain the shareholders from dumping ownership of the management any more than my members could dump me for any reason at all. You remember the red herring that we came up with at some point. So I don't think it was driven by the reference model of membership or designator. I thought it was driven out of a genuine desire to do it that way. And therefore, when the public comments get analyzed, and Keith makes the little purple note on number 11, honestly, if there were several commenters who thought we ought to have criteria, you can't measure that against the commenters who supported having no criteria, because anyone who said they supported the proposal to spill the board without getting into specifics is literally supporting the idea that it's an unconstrained spill the board proposal. So I don't think you can count the number who thought we ought to have criteria and balance it against some other explicit number, and I don't think we should say that it's unconstrained because of the membership reference model. There was more thinking that went into it than that. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Steve. And I think that's a reasonable recollection. I guess the point, though, is that we may need to apply some further effort around this point or this question because there were some questions asked. And I think that it's something that we may need to address somehow. And maybe it's not to actually set specific criteria, but it's more to further explain the thinking behind what you just described. So thanks, Steve. Alan, you're next, and then we'll move on.
Thank you. I support your conclusion you just came to. Now, I've gone on record saying I don't think this is a power we should have, because I believe the selective removal should be able to address any issue. But if we do have this, I think it's essential that we not have specific criteria. Number one, we're not going to be able to guess ahead what they're going to be. We do not want it something that someone can appeal and take an injunction saying we've done it wrongly. And it's hard to come up with the right criteria. We could say, well, if the board has unanimously voted against something that we, you know, for something that the community thinks is patently wrong, then that's a reason to object to kill the whole board. But I think it was Avery earlier said, it's a good thing we're not on the board because we can come up with all these cunning things a board could do. Well, a board could have, you know, round robin, pick a random person to not be the unanimous, to not agree with the rest of them so that there's never a unanimous decision, and they could avoid, you know, that particular criteria. So I think it's essential, if we're going to have this power, that it be unrestricted by some criteria which we could have to demonstrate and prove and not have people gaming it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much, Alan. And thanks, Steve. This is exactly what I was hoping to get out of this discussion.
I'm Alan, by the way.
Didn't I say Alan? I'm sorry. What did I say?
Steve.
No, I said thank you, Alan.
We could all be Steve, and that would make it a lot easier.
Actually, I must have broken up because I said thank you, Alan, and thank you, Steve. Sorry about that. Sorry for the confusion.
Maybe my end broke up.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So I just wanted to note, though, this is exactly the type of exchange that I was hoping to get out of this discussion, and it will help me take the next step to prepare the documentation for the broader discussions with the full CCWG. So thank you. Let's move on then to paragraph 241. It says, beyond the power set out above to remove individual directors, that's referencing the earlier part of the proposal, this power would allow the community to cause the recall of the entire ICANN board. The community would initiate use of this power on the petition of two-thirds of the SOs and ACs in ICANN, with at least one SO and one AC petitioning, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I want to take a moment because, and Alan, you've mentioned this several times, I think, in the past several weeks, including in Buenos Aires, is the concern that what if we end up with a very small number of SO or AC participating? And this gets to the question of participation in the community council, or whatever we're going to call it, and how we deal with non-participation or abstention. And I know there was previous discussion on this point, but this is something I think we need to spend a little more time and effort around, is the discussion of the two-thirds of the ESOs and ACs, and make sure that as we update this section, that it is, again, in sync with the model, whatever the model ends up being. So let me pause there and see if there's any discussion on this point. Any questions or comments? Okay, Alan?
Yeah, I this is not one in this case I agonize over. If we have no SO, you know, only one SO and no ACs who are using their privileges, then we don't meet the criteria, and we shouldn't, because one SO should not be able to kill the whole board. So I think it's one of these self-limiting things that, yes, it may restrict the use of the power. But if that smaller part of the community feels strongly about it, then it rightfully should restrict the use. So I'm not concerned at this level.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. Jordan?
Sorry, I was on mute. I think we should keep the very high threshold to initiate use of this. And in terms of whether people participate or not, I mean, two-thirds of the SOs and ACs is out of seven is a bit of a strange ratio, right? But setting that aside, it essentially means you need five of the seven to petition just to even start the consideration. maybe that's too high, but it has to be high, whatever it is. So I think that having a high threshold to start this process is fine.
Okay, thanks, Jordan. And I should note that there was only one comment out of the 28 that were submitted that actually called for the ability of one group, you know, one SO to be able to trigger the power. And so one out of 28 is clearly a minority. And I think there was strong support across the comments, except for that one, for this to be a very high threshold. So I think that's certainly consistent. Alan?
Thank you. At either pedantic or anal level, I think we need to be clear whether it's two-thirds of the SOs and two-thirds of the ACs or two-thirds of the sum.
Okay. Noted. And agree. Okay. Any other comments or questions on this before we move on? All right. Very good. Next item, 242. After a petition is raised, there will be a set period of time for SOs and ACs to individually and collectively deliberate and discuss whether the removal of the board is warranted under the circumstances. And so the question here is set period of time, that we need to define what we mean by set period of time. I don't think we necessarily need to, again, decide that today, but it's, again, it's a flag for further work and something that we need to drill down on. Because that was one of the questions that was, in fact, raised as a possible, you know, concern about, you know, the circumstances and the continuity measures. Is if this is going to happen, that it needs to be better defined. Comments or questions? Aubrey?
Yeah, Aubrey speaking. A question I have in reading this is, if we're going through all this, is there any point at which we should have a deliberative period with the board? Perhaps it's during this, once petition is raised and we are deliberating, shouldn't there be some deliberation or some discussion with the board about what we're proposing before we do our voting?
Okay. Thanks, Aubrey. I think that's a good question, and I, you know, it sort of gets to the point of, you know, telegraphing the intent and to say, you know, hey, board, we're in effect casting a vote of no confidence, and we're going to be initiating this process. I would expect that prior to this point, there would have been quite a bit of communication, and that it wouldn't be a surprise to the board that the community would be this unhappy. But I think it's reasonable to suggest that there might be, you know, sort of a built-in time period or checkpoint between the community and the board around, you know, before actually having to initiate the process.
Yeah, this is, if I can continue, they might have an impression that something was happening, but once the petition is set, then, I mean, then it's on the table. So I think it's only fair and reasonable that there should be some kind of discussion, that they should be able to defend their position before we vote.
Okay, thanks, Aubrey. That was, I think that's certainly worth further discussion. There wasn't anything specific about that in the public comments, but, again, it does sort of get to the question of, you know, how do you handle the process and how do you, you know, reduce the potential for risk and instability? So I suggest we do, you know, discuss that a little bit further. And Jordan's suggesting that we note that as a point to discuss in Paris. So agreed. Okay, Aubrey, is that an old hint? I think it probably is.
Yes, it is, and I wasn't near my computer to put it down. Sorry.
All right, not a problem. Okay, next item on the agenda, 243. This talks about the percentage of or the threshold for exercising the power. Again, 75% was there was strong support for 75%, and the language of available within the community mechanism that I have highlighted is, you know, it raises some questions, and I think, again, we need to make sure that we sync this up with whatever the model ends up being. And we need to further define the meaning of available within the community mechanism, and to make sure that we're in a position to address non-participation of SOs and ACs. So again, not something that we need to dwell on at the moment, but again, something I think that we need to address. It's related to the earlier topic that we discussed. Alan, I saw your hand go up. Feel free to jump in.
No, you've covered it. As I said, first we have to determine the other one, then we can put better words in here.
Yeah, exactly. So, and again, I'm just trying to highlight the areas that are going to require, I think, further work based on the public comments and as we move forward. Okay, moving on to what used to be 245. If we scroll down, I have removed 245, which was the reference to the alternative option for the threshold at 80%, because I said there were only a couple of supporting comments for 80% and a strong majority supported 75%. So I think that we can take that as sort of strong enough guidance from the community that 75% is the number we should be working with. Okay, assuming no comments or questions on that, let's move on to 246. And one of the reasons, while this topic was easy, it was an easy assignment for me because there was strong support. There wasn't much divergence for the topic itself. It was a little bit more challenging because there were a lot of open issues that we had and sort of the ongoing work that's enumerated in 246. So I've tried to identify maybe some paths forward here, or at least to acknowledge the concerns that were raised in the public comments. So ongoing work in the CCWG accountability will flesh out how to implement this community decision or power through the ICANN members. Of course, we have the word member there. We need to be cautious that we sync up. And how to deal with transitional matters raised, including at least the following. A phase of caretaker behavior by the outgoing board while new members are elected. So I've just added by notation, a minority subset of public comments reflected concern about the caretaker board concept, including potential limits on the pool of available candidates, discomfort with allowing the spilled board to remain in a caretaker capacity, and potential instability during the transition phase. And several comments emphasize the need to carefully plan for and define the succession process to limit instability. So those are two points I think that came through in a number of the public comments. And I know that we've had conversations on the list with CCWG members as well as board members and others about the concerns of instability and risk by the unseating of a seated board. And so we're going to need to, I think, spend some time either before Paris or in Paris or both trying to further define what the process would be for dealing with a caretaker board in the unlikely event that the ICANN board were in fact spilled. Let me pause there and see if anybody has a comment. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I implied this before, but I'm not sure I said it clearly. This caretaker board may be there for a moderately long period of time, and I don't think, although I think we have to define with some level of care what the caretaker board can do, I don't think we can limit it to approving expenses and signing, you know, whatever expenses the board has and naming auditors. ICANN is going to keep on running. It could be for a long time. There could be other crises coming up other than the one that caused the board removal, or perhaps the one that caused the board removal has to be dealt with. This is not really going to be a caretaker in the sense of very, very limited function for a limited amount of time. So I think we're going to have to need a little bit of time to think about that and take some time to think about it, and be more specific, because I think people are reading into it a very limited function board, and I'm not sure that's realistic. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. Understood. Jordan, over to you.
Thanks, Keith. I'm a supporter of the caretaker board concept. I think one of the things that we need to do is specify both its kind of mandate, its composition, so how it comes into being in this situation. And we have to specify the nature of the replacement process. I certainly didn't contemplate that where the community had rolled the board, it would instigate the normal approval process, which takes a very long time. I always had the view that we would have to create an expedited appointment process for such a situation that applied to the NOMCOM and to all of the other appointment sort of designation bodies. And I think we do have to do that as part of the implementation. I don't think we can shy away from that. We have had legal advice, firstly, that the board is the board and it has fiduciary responsibilities. I don't think anyone is arguing about that, but there is no problem in us setting out very clearly what the expectations are for that convention about what this board is meant to do and not do. And, of course, if it starts doing things beyond that, it simply would speed up the appointment process for the replacement board, no doubt. On the question of the CEO, which has come up, is this the right time to discuss that, Keith?
I'm sorry, say that again?
The matter of the CEO and whether they form part of the caretaker board or are being removed.
Yeah, that was actually a point down below, but we can certainly skip to that now if you like.
Oh, no, okay, I want to skip ahead, so I'll save that for later. But I think, basically, when we were discussing this in Istanbul, Holly in particular was like, this is a very standard thing which you can work out quite easily and we can do that. So I think this is one of those things where we do need to bring to bear the experience of the law firms who deal with this kind of problem. Yeah, it's not a remote or unfamiliar one. And we do need to get a bit of work from them in fleshing out how this caretaker board would work. So I think we should requisition that advice.
Okay. Thanks, Jordan. Agreed. At what point would we do that? Is that something that you would pass along to Leon, or just in terms of logistics? How do we make that happen?
Can we note it as an action point for Jordan to approach the co-chairs in respect of getting legal advice on the caretaker board question? And if that's listed as an action point that comes through in the notes, I'll do it. In fact, I'll start writing the email right now, but that just puts it on the record.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Jordan. Okay, let's then move on to the next item, the next sub-bullet, which is a need to elect alternate board directors in each board selection process. And so I guess, again, here, this is, you know, very much related to what we just described about the three items, Jordan, that you noted need to define the competition, the mandate, and the process for a replacement or caretaker board. And I think that point relates directly to that. We need to consider the concern that's been raised about the potential limitations on the pool of candidates, from within the community or without. Next item referred to future work around a predefined subset of the community that could function as an interim board. And here the idea that if we in advance had, sort of whether it's a list of candidates or a list of potential positions that would take over, that would ease some of the concerns about uncertainty, but it might raise other concerns. So let me pause there. And under that, I noted, perhaps the chairs and vice chairs of the SOs and ACs and the NOMCOM could be pre-designated to take over in this unlikely occasion. Another item that that Adam Peek actually raised with me offline on email is the possibility that the non-voting board members could remain on the board as at least the core of the caretaker element to be augmented possibly by others, for example, the chairs or vice chairs of the SOs, ACs, and NOMCOM. Again, just sort of open suggestions and discussion points, but it's the thought of predetermining who the board members might be. Let me pause there. Jordan, I see your hand. I'm not sure if that's new or old, and then Alan.
It was old.
Okay. Thank you, Jordan. Alan, over to you.
Okay. I support what Jordan said in the chat, that he would strongly oppose the liaisons taking over as voting board members. If there was indeed groupthink going on, then they could well be just as susceptible. I question the item number two, I think, a need to elect alternate board directors for each selection process. Was that implying that when we pick a board member, we also pick a fallback who would take over if we kick the first one out? Is that the way that's being read?
You know, Alan, that's a great question, and I'm not sure. I'm not sure what that meant. That was actually listed in the, you know, in the original proposal. I don't know if anybody happens to recall. I see Jordan put his hand up, so maybe that's
Yeah, well, let me make my comment, and then we'll go to Jordan. I would strongly object to that. If we were so wrong in picking our directors, we were probably just as wrong in picking the alternates.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, thanks, Alan. Jordan, over to you.
I'd be strongly opposed to that as well for a different reason, which is what kind of incentive does it put on this pending alternate person to start making trouble for the current incumbent? I think that's an incentive to madness. What we were trying to do, I think, with this list of things in the report was just to give a signal to the community that we were thinking about these things. And there had been a proposal from somewhere at some point that electing alternate board members. If memory serves, it was something that Tijani said in Istanbul, but I'm not a detailed memory kind of guy, so I might have the wrong person attached to that concept. I'm strongly opposed to the liaison board members suddenly getting voting power on an interim board. Can you imagine what Congress would say if we said that the chair of the GAC suddenly had one of the four votes in the ICANN board? I think that's a dead letter before you even start talking about it properly. So I think that we need to make sure that this process doesn't remove the CEO from their role as CEO. But the rest, I've already written an email to the co-chairs asking whether the general point about this is needed or whether further specification is required from us to get an answer from the lawyers on how to do this best.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Jordan. Jonathan, and then Greg.
Yeah, this is Jonathan for the transcript. You know, in the movie The Untouchables, when the judge realized that the jury had been bribed, he just swapped juries with another courtroom. So maybe we just find a complementary organization and borrow their board for a while to be the interim court. So I guess this is more of a general comment that's occurring to me as we're having this discussion. I feel like this entire discussion sounds... It helps to reinforce the notion that filling the board is no simple thing and that it's not something that we would do lightly. It would have a lot of complexity associated with it. So I have to say that personally, the conversation we're having right now kind of reinforces my desire to have, you know, enforceable accountability that along the way to filling the board just because of what a difficult mechanism I think this will end up being used. So that's just a general observation from this discussion thus far, is that sort of transactional accountability is more important than people may even perceive.
Okay. Thanks, Jonathan. Greg, over to you.
Thanks. Probably going to reinforce rather than add anything truly new, but I also have to say that the idea that the liaisons could stay on the board and B, somehow become the board seems like the exact opposite of a good idea. It seems to me that those liaisons also need to be spilled as well. I mean, they are appointed or they come from, in some fashion, the SOs and ACs. Many of them do. I mean, there are a couple that don't, like I think the IETF liaison. So I guess the issue of spilling the board gets to be interesting when they get to the couple of board members who are not appointed by either the community or the NOMCOM, and in essence might not be removable unless they agreed that they are removable along with everybody else who are more closely linked with members of the ICANN, official ICANN community, if you will, which the IETF is not quite. In that same sense. I would, vehemently oppose that. And I see Steve's suggestion in the chat that maybe there needs to be a new board slate selected at the same time as the spill takes place, and that needs to be kind of a necessary predicate to getting the spill actually enacted. And that may be, a good idea, but I think the best idea is to ask those people who have spent, years, decades even, dealing with things like board spills in our corporate governance honchos, aficionados at Sidley and Adler to weigh in on how this, you know, typically takes place, especially if it's being done at an extraordinary point as opposed to at a predetermined annual meeting. Probably requires a special meeting of the members or whoever it may be who's doing this, the empowered milk and cookie withholders. So I think we need some. This is where we really need, real professional advice, because at this point we're starting to reinvent wheels here. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Greg. Alan, over to you for the last word on this, and then we move on.
Just a comment on Jordan's comment in the board that one of the 16 is the CEO that we've decided we can't remove. Two things. First of all, I don't think we need to agonize over the liaisons. The board has the right, and presumably the new caretaker board has the right to remove all liaisons unilaterally by their choice, with the exception of the GAC liaison. So we may have to live with the GAC liaison, but the rest of them can be ditched at the whim of the board. So that I don't think is an issue, and not one we need to focus on. And I'm not sure we want to get into the political water of changing the rule about the board removing the GAC liaison. The suggestion that was made in one of the items that maybe the chairs and vice chairs or whatever of the ACs and SOs could be could be the interim board, that makes complete sense, with the exception of the fact that those are the people who are going to be spearheading the removal of the previous board, and that could be presumed as being slightly self-serving. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. Fair points. And I think the comment earlier about the GAC chair becoming a voting board member is put some caution around that suggestion anyway. So, all right, so perhaps a way forward, I note that Matthew has typed in the chat that perhaps we can ask for some advice by Paris and park this one. This may also be a candidate, the discussion around the interim board for a possible work stream 2 issue. The definition of caretaker and all the moving parts and the details that we're trying to deal with here could be deferred to work stream 2 because the unlikely nature of this power ever being used. But that's just a thought. So I've got Jonathan and then Alan, and then let's move on.
Old hand, sorry.
Okay, thanks, Jonathan. Alan, is that a new hand or an old hand?
I didn't think I put my hand up, but maybe I did. I was just about to type in, if we defer the caretaker board to Workstream 2, it would also have to put on hold the ability to take action until Workstream 2 delivers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Any other questions or comments on this before we move on? All right, seeing none. Flipping the page, and basically at this point I imported the language from the CWG transition proposal to make sure that we, in this particular power, as we need to be in all the powers, but in this power, that we're aware of any key dependencies. So in this is exactly the language that was pulled from the CWG stewardship proposal. And it talks about the dependencies. And if we go down to number 2, the community empowerment mechanisms, and then specifically A, so 2A, and I'll read that whole little section. It says, the empowerment of the multi-stakeholder community to have the following rights with respect to the ICANN board, the exercise of which should be ensured by the related creation of a stakeholder community member group. And A is the ability to appoint and remove members of the ICANN board and to recall the entire ICANN board. So, this is an important dependency that we have in the CCWG with the proposal or from the proposal of the CWG. So I just wanted to make sure that was clear to everybody as we continue these discussions. And that's really all I have for discussion today. Obviously, we need to do quite a bit more work on all of this, and there will be probably some additional language that we will want to put out for the next round. There certainly will be. But we've got some time to get that done, and I think this will be a topic of important discussion in Paris. Steve, I see your hand.
Thanks, Keith, and good work on this. The yellow text that you highlighted from CWG was written well before we got to Buenos Aires and went with an empowered SOAC model. So they were using the language with regard to our proposal about a reference model, which used the word member. So is there a way we could short-circuit all this and quickly ask the chairs of the CWG to verify that and to say that if we replace those words to say the exercise of by the empowered SO and AC mechanism instead of having the words / member group, and if they agreed that that is an appropriate substitution, then we would be able to leave this completely out of the discussion of enforceability and stay in our sandbox by describing community powers that are exercised by the empowered SOs and ACs. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. I have a thought on that, but let's move to the queue. Jordan and then Alan.
Thanks. I think that we do need to have a discussion with the CWG about enforceability generally, and I think I've seen a note that says LISA from the CWG leadership will be in Paris, so I think that that's a discussion that's likely to be scheduled there. I think Steve might be slightly on the wrong track though there, whether it's membership or whatever. I think the point is the requirement is for the ability to appoint and remove members of the board and to recall the entire ICANN board. So on that basis, I don't think we can sub this out to Workstream 2. I think we could do a bare, functional, workable, something that none of us really like but can live with approach to the caretaker issue. That means this power is workable in Workstream 1, and then we can schedule Workstream 2, or I'm at danger of suggesting a Workstream 1.5, but we can talk about that later, fleshing out an improvement of that model. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Jordan. Alan, over to you, and then back to Steve.
Thank you. I can easily live what Jordan just said of an interim model we don't like, but technically it's there should we need it in that period of time. I read the CWG comment as giving us a huge amount of flexibility. They're using a lowercase, a stakeholder community, or member group, and they didn't capitalize member. I think we have ultimate flexibility there. I don't think we need to really... I mean, we can certainly check with them, but I just don't think there's a need to change those words. I think they've given us complete flexibility.
Okay. Thanks, Alan. And Steve, back to you, and then I will jump in and then try to wrap up.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Jordan, I was never suggesting anything with respect to Workstream 2. It was respect to the phrase member, community member group, and it's a lowercase m, as Alan just pointed out. And the clarification we need from CWG is whether they would be happy with the words empowered ACs and SO mechanism. Because none of this anticipates whether you're a member or designator, and that's why the word member will feel misplaced here. And it got there because we had it in our May 3rd draft as our reference model, and by cleaning that up very quickly, we completely resolved this problem.
Okay. Thanks,
Can
Keith.
I just add one point, Keith? Sorry.
Sure.
Look, I just want to be really clear that that's a copy and paste out of the CWG's proposal. There is almost no chance of reopening that text and re-seeking consensus on changes to it. It has no relevance to our work. We are not obliged, by the way that's worded, to come up with a legal membership model. I think that's already been made clear by the CWG co-chairs. If there are going to be any changes to the CWG proposal, it's going to be because the ICG kicks it back to the names community. But in the meantime, let's not ask for any changes to that wording, seriously.
Okay, thanks, Jordan. And, my view on this is that I read the language in the way that I think Jordan just described, is that it is not presupposing or prejudging a membership model per se. It's basically saying that these powers need to exist, that the community needs to have the powers. It doesn't, I don't think, say that it must be done through a membership model. So I think the key is that we as a work party and in the CCWG just recognize that the powers are in fact required by the CWG proposal, and that we need to keep that in mind as we have our discussions. Okay, Steve, is that an old hand or a new hand? Okay, old hand. All right, very good. So with that, I don't think I have anything else to add at this point, Jordan. So I think I've given as much of a summary as I can, and obviously a lot more work to do on this, but I really appreciate everybody's feedback on the discussion document. So, Jordan, back to you.
Thank you very much, Keith. And your next task, should you choose to accept it, or even, in fact, should you not choose to accept it, is to scrub the document up into the revised text for discussion at Paris. So I hope I hope that you're up for that.
Yep, happy to do it. Thanks.
Great, thank you. Well, thank you, everyone. That's two chunky pieces of work that we've had a good discussion about in the last 90 minutes. And I wanted to do two things. I wanted to give you informally and off-recordly a kind of pricey of the way the agenda is shaping up for Paris in respect of our stuff. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but there are sessions scheduled at the moment in the working draft about the AOC review's incorporation to the bylaws. There's a half hour for that. There's a good hour of discussion on CWG dependencies cross-check. There's an hour and a half for the community powers on the budget, strategic plan, and on the bylaws stuff, the bylaws bits that we're going to be discussing on our call on Monday. There's several discussions of the lawyers on the general model. There's a further discussion of board member recall refinements. So there are a few hours of call time on our stuff, and there's another session as well on voting weights. I anticipate that the draft agenda, if it hasn't already gone out to the list, I can't remember, will be out soon. So the point of me raising this is just to show you that there is going to be time in the agenda to talk about these critical issues that we're raising. The other thing I wanted to do just briefly now was to pricey our next call, our last preparatory call on Monday. We've got a 2-hour call forecast. And at the moment on the agenda for that, we've got the bylaws community powers, so the ability to block standard bylaws, which Izumi is drafting material for. And we've got the approval of fundamental bylaws stuff, which I'm going to do over the weekend. My understanding is that Alan Greenberg will be doing a paper on the removal of individual ICANN directors. We've done the whole board one today. And I'm anticipating also from Alan and the others some draft text on the 8th of July discussion we had about the nature of the community mechanism. And if it isn't draft text, it might be an updated discussion document for talking about in Paris. And finally, I guess we will need to run through the next version of this paper that we've worked through today, the drafting that comes out of the paper today. So does anyone else have any other things that they think we're going to need to tackle in that call on Monday? Because there'll be some new material and some review of stuff we've already seen. We're going to have to be very efficient, so it'll be a little bit more of a fast-paced discussion than we've had these past few days. If there are any hands up on that, on either of those two things I've just mentioned, or indeed any other items that you'd like us to discuss today, and we'll come back to what's in the chat, a question from Robin and from Gary shortly. Steve, please go ahead.
Hey, Jordan. When we were together in Istanbul, you put a good deal of time into a spreadsheet that showed how to get the supermajority thresholds at different levels of participation. And I'm not saying it has to be a big discussion item on Monday, but we ought to have that ready in case we have to update our document, our proposal, to say that if only 20 of the 29 votes participate, what would be supermajority? If, let's say, the GAC decided it couldn't vote on an item, then we'd have only 15 of the 29 possible votes participating on a board, on a bylaws measure, for example. What would be supermajority there? And if it's all just 75% and you do the math, well, that's easy. But I'm just asking you whether there are other particular threshold questions getting to supermajority. If on a given vote, like blocking a bylaw, only three ACSOs deem it worthy to contribute, and if they only did so, is it really still 75%? Is it two of the three ACSOs participating? And no need to answer now, but do you think that's a topic we have to be ready for in Paris?
I think it is a topic that we have to be ready for in Paris, Steve. So thank you for raising it. I think that some of that discussion is part of the group that Alan has led on the voting in the community mechanism, Alan, Robin, Matthew, if I recall. I don't want to claim responsibility for the spreadsheet. That was a Thomas Rickert initiative. I found it a little bit difficult to deal with because it was introduced so late into the discussion. I think that there is a bunch of interesting questions around it that I'm hoping the next version of Alan's paper does deal with, because we will need to, in the end, resolve a proposal in Paris or very shortly thereafter. I don't have anything better to say than that, but thank you for drawing attention to it. We could disinter the spreadsheet or something else. In terms of, we'll carry on, Alan. Alan, your hand is up.
Yeah, I just wanted to add something to that. One of the items you'll recall in the paper on community mechanisms is the minimum critical mass which can take action. And that one we said we really can't do until we know the total number of votes involved in the process. So, yes, I will be addressing that in what I do, but it will be partially an open question at this point. But I think the final picking of the numbers is a critical issue, and we're going to have to hopefully come to closure on the weighting scheme, and then, as a second pass, what the minimum critical masses are. So it's something we'll do. The spreadsheets are not particularly onerous. We're looking at very small numbers. But it is something we're going to have to look at.
Thanks, Alan. And can I just check, since you're talking, you're okay to do the individual director recall as well, recognizing that's even more work for you to do this weekend?
I've already told my family don't expect to see much of me this weekend. But I make no promises, but I will be trying. I hope I will be. I'll get you something, whether I get a draft document or something else, we'll see.
Okay. All right. If I find myself with a spare hour today, which is our Saturday, I might chuck you something to look at if I
okay.
get time to
Excellent.
To give you a hand. Gary, beg your pardon. I'm just used to defaulting to the word Mark when I see UK government. My apologies. I think Steve's probably dealt with your questions about the GAC role and the community empowerment mechanism, certainly from my point of view and what the CCWG has discussed so far. It's going to be at least importantly a matter for the GAC to help settle about its role, advisory versus participating in these mechanisms. And Robin, to your question about the addressing of the other rights that membership has, for what it's worth, I still think my impression of where the CCWG is going is that it has had those memos but hasn't talked them out yet. I expect them to be discussed in Paris. It might be worth having a quick look at that summary Sam Eisner memo, which is 99% sure in my mind is where the other statutory rights of membership are dealt with, along with the concerns they create. Also, I saw some points in the lawyer's presentation on Tuesday about various downsides of membership in terms of those statutory rights, and I know other members of the CCWG see what I see as downsides, as upsides. So it is a discussion that is rolling. Everyone, my last question is, are there any other items that need to be discussed now? And if the answer to that is no, then we've got a pretty clear picture about our agenda for our call on Monday, and we've got a weekend to have working by the looks of it. Any other items? Last call here. They don't have to be. Just giving you time for the introverts among us. And we'll call that a no. So thank you, everyone, for participating in this meeting. A good, substantive, good-natured conversation. Let us hope that the whole CCWG adopts our wonderful approach at the meeting in Paris next week. I hope you have a good weekend. And I would like to encourage you all to be cracking on that stuff for Monday. And we'll talk soon. Thank you.